You're listening to the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, our upcoming Kickstarter campaign, and much more at smalltownmonsters.com.
There we go. Good evening, folks. Welcome back to STM Live. My name is Aaron. I have the privilege and honor of being your host once again. My sincere apologies to anyone who was as disappointed as I was by the cancellation of last week's show. Some form of bubonic plague has been working its way through the ranks over here at Small Town Monsters, and even though I live hundreds of miles away from the rest of the crew, I still managed to catch it. So thank you for bearing with us. Thank you for coming back a week later. Shout out to our new squad members at the top of the hour, Kathy Smith, Jason Grieshover, and Deborah Simpson. Thank you guys for joining the squad. We appreciate you very, very much. Couple of announcements before we get into our show tonight. We are 10 days away from the conclusion of the 2024 Kickstarter campaign. This is the only place to get a whole bunch of cool stuff, such as Jonathan Dodd's t-shirt and hoodie designs, Jean St. Jean's Goatman statue, the hardcover edition of Hunting Grounds, Dogmen of the Lakes, which I just finished writing a few days ago, as well as your name in the credits of our upcoming film slate. And as soon as we hit our initial stretch goal, Cursed Waters, Creature of Lake Okanagan, will be added to that reward roster. So check that out. The link will be in the description. And if you are a squad member, you will very soon have access to the first episode of Alexander Petikoff's new series, Strange Places. For episode one, Alex is investigating the land between the lakes, which you're going to be hearing a lot about the land between the lakes over the next couple of months. And it's going to start right here with Alex's new show. The worldwide premiere is on Sunday, and squad members will have access early in ad-free 4K. Last but not least, we have a new and very special episode of The Lore You Know, featuring none other than Heather Mosier herself, with some weird guy filling in to host. This is the 40th episode, and we thought this would be a great opportunity for the audience to get to know Heather a little bit better. So check that out on your podcasting platform of choice. All right, folks, we're talking UFOs tonight. On the Trail of UFOs, Volume 2. Got two excellent guests here to hang out with us tonight. Moving from left to right on my screen, he is a cinematographer, business guy with Small Town Monsters. I don't entirely understand what he does or has done. I just know it's a lot of really important and cool stuff. This gentleman has been with STM since the beginning, Mr. Jason Utez. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing?
Fantastic, man. I'm excited to have you on here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for making time. We do have a second guest as well. It is not Seth. Seth disappeared. I can't find him. I don't know where he is. But last minute, very special guest who also appears in this film, coming in again at the last minute. I texted this dude like 2 hours ago. Mr. Alex Petikoff. Hey, buddy.
What's going on, guys? Good to be with you here. Trying out the red tonight, Aaron. What do you think? Is it? I feel like the red is not as good as the blue or the green. I don't know.
I like it. Excuse me. I'm still getting over this cough. I like it. Man. It's a good vibe. I've got some blue. You've got the red. Jason's got the white light going on in the background. So this will be a very American discussion. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you said, the new Strange Places. So literally, the episode is uploading behind me as we speak.
Yes.
I've just been having a lot of export issues today. It's just a lot of stuff. So we got about an hour left on that. So squad members will be able to see it. I have the trailer here just in case you wanted to play it. It's totally up to you, though.
I'd love to do that. I think it'd be fantastic if we did that immediately.
Yeah, might as well.
Sweet. I'm going to add it to the stage and we're going to watch it. How do I get it? I got to make sure it's in the right form. Nope. Sorry. Sorry, guys, I'm not smart. Here we go.
The Land Between the Lakes is a national recreation area located in Kentucky and Tennessee, and is a picturesque natural paradise filled with flora and fauna. But there is a darker side to the land between the lakes.
This recreation area was originally formed in the 1960s through the government's seizure of land using eminent domain. The land had belonged to hundreds, if not possibly thousands, of families that had resided in this region for centuries, leaving bitter resentment that still persists to this day. The land between the lakes has most infamously been associated with stories of what is called the Beast of LBL, which is described as an upright dogman type creature, allegedly associated with a dubious massacre story from the 1980s. Bizarre crimes, cult activity, haunted areas, strange lights, and other mysterious phenomena are also regularly associated with the LBL. One might say that this area has taken on urban legend-like status for one reason or another. But why exactly is this the case? This is what we will explore in this episode of Strange Places, as we talk with various researchers familiar with the area and visit the land between the lakes itself.
Dude, I'm hyped on this. It's going to be really difficult for me not to derail this whole conversation into the land between the lakes.
Yeah, we'll save that one.
Yeah. Maybe that'll be next time. Have you been to the LBL, Jason?
No, I haven't. I was scheduled to go out with everybody this past fall, but I ended up hanging back for that one. So, love to see it at some point.
It's a weird place, dude.
Yeah, it's very weird.
It's weird.
Aaron and I were just knee deep in that, I guess, with you just finished the book. Obviously, I was editing that, so a lot of weird stuff. But super excited for all that, but I'm pumped to talk about UFOs tonight, too.
Yeah. We'll compare notes on that another time, very soon.
Yes, sir.
So, excuse me. I'm still getting over this cough, guys. I'm going to do my best, but no promises.
No, it's all good. You can just, if you need us to co-host, we'll do it.
I'll just hack my lungs out to the microphone for an hour.
It'd be great. Just hold up some signs, write what you need to say, and yeah. we'll read it out.
I'll probably be sneezing through the hour, so you're good.
It's going to be great.
Man, my nose has been congested, so I guess we're like, the sum of three parts makes one functional human, I guess.
Exactly. And that is how we will get through this interview.
Yes.
So I was re-watching this episode today, and I watched it way back in the day, close to when it first came out. And it was really cool seeing all of you guys in this, years later, after STM has grown and evolved and, become the juggernaut of industry that it is today. But there's a really important question I have, and maybe I should have taken this out of my notes when Seth let me know he wasn't going to be here. But why doesn't Seth wear a beanie anymore? Does anyone know?
I saw that question earlier. I have no idea.
Okay.
I feel like I haven't seen him wear. Oh, man. I think he wore one in Alaska. That's probably the last time I saw him wear one.
Okay. So it's still been a while. Yeah.
I think he had that. He has this, like, this emo kind of look he does with that beanie kind of set up and some of the musical choice that he has. So it kind of works. But I guess he's gone through a different character arc lately.
That's what's cool about watching this. It's like the prequel to, never mind. That was a dumb question. It would have been funnier if Seth was here. I'm curious to you guys, just kind of right off the top of the dome, any of the locations you visited during this shoot, because it seems like you guys covered a lot of ground. What locations stuck out? Oh, and sorry, took me a second. BH is in here reminding me that this is how this show works. Any questions or comments you guys have, please drop them in the chat for either of our guests tonight, and we will answer them. It'll be great. But to start us off, memorable locations from this shoot. I'm curious about that.
For me, just I'm always super psyched to visit the American Southwest. Sedona, Arizona was incredible. Through the years with Small Town Monsters, I've got to see a lot of amazing places, and that branch of the trip in particular was really special. But then to the other extreme, for the leg of the trip that Alex was there, we got to visit New Hampshire and Vermont during peak foliage season, and it was just incredible.
The drone shots on this one are epic. Yeah, I was just thinking about that today.
Yeah, that was awesome. So I wasn't on the whole shoot. I think Jason was on most of it. And it was kind of interesting because this shoot, it was like multiple pieces filmed over the course of, I guess, the whole year. This was 2019, by the way. So this was before, you know, the world went insane, or more insane than it was. But there was like the Storm Area 51 stuff. The meme was going on at the time. Ufology's come, I think, a long way since even that time period. But yeah, the New Hampshire shoot was what I got to be a part of. Obviously, I live up here, so I took them to the seacoast. We went to Exeter, where you have the infamous Exeter UFO incident that was covered in the documentary. And then we went up to the White Mountains of Betty and Barney Hill area, which is, you know, one of my favorite areas to hike. Just the White Mountains, beautiful. I actually realized I was wearing this very same Adidas tracksuit looking thing in the episode. I just realized I just found this thing recently. But there was a funny memory, Jason, if you remember. I think it was you and me, because we were going on this gondola. There's this gondola that goes up to Cannon Mountain, and we were going up there to get some B-roll. And it was like a busy day. And, you know, we're walking around with, like, I think it was after we came down from the bottom of the mountain. Was it you or Zach that was with me? I feel like it was you. We got yelled at. So we thought we were carrying tripods, a couple of us, and we had cameras. I thought we were getting yelled at, and some guy was like, hey, you know, they want to see you in the main office. And we were like about ready to throw down. We're like, what is this? What are they going to like start fining us for carrying cameras? Well, no, it turned out there was actually a guy who worked in the gondola in like the ticket office that knew of Small Town Monsters. And he comped all of our tickets, which saved us like 100-something bucks, because it was myself, Adam, Shannon, Jason, Zach, Seth. So it was like 5 or 6 people. So we got to have a nice dinner after that because he comped our tickets. It was just so funny how it happened, because we thought we were about to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And then the guy was just like, oh, no, I love your guys' stuff. And I recognized you. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. It was really nice. Act of kindness, I guess. I don't know if you remember that, Jason, but I feel like it was either you or Zach who was with me. Yeah, it was funny.
I think Zach was with you, but I remember we were
Yeah, we all went over there, and the guy was like, oh, I wanted to, you know. It was just really cool. So
yeah, we thought somebody was going to try to seize our footage or something.
Yeah, you never know, right? Tourist spots.
Well, you guys also visited the back gate of Area 51 for this shoot. We see it a little bit in kind of the opening montage. I don't know if you've been there, Alex. I can't remember in my head now if you were in that shot, because I've been watching too many documentaries lately.
No, I wasn't there for that one. But okay. Again, that was right around the Storm Area 51 stuff. I remember texting Seth about it at the time. I'm like, you know, this is going on right now. He's like, dude, we're literally about to go there. How weird is that? You know, so it was kind of all the timing was funny.
Yeah, we thought that we were going to get arrested because we were on our way to the gates of Area 51, and we just decided to do like a random Facebook Live from the car. Somebody added that to the Facebook group about Storm Area 51 as it was blowing up, and people were talking to us in the chat as if we were on our way to Storm Area 51. And I was pretty nervous. I thought we were going to get pulled over or something worse. But yeah, that was crazy. We just happened to be there right in the middle of all that.
Did you guys encounter anything kind of crazy when you went there? Because I went out there once, and I'll be honest, nothing really happened. It was a really cool experience, but nothing happened. So
yeah, nothing crazy, other than just the kind of weight of realizing where you're at, you know, this thing that's been mythologized for so long, and you walk up to it and it's just kind of a gate in the desert. But it was a beautiful area. It was really awesome to visit the little alien motel bar little ways up the road. But no, nothing crazy at all happened.
I always hear stories online about, oh, they're, you know, my brother went out there and had guns pointed at him and a helicopter followed us. And I'm like, where did you go?
Right. Like, did you physically crawl into the base? Like, what? How did that happen?
Yeah.
That's wild.
What's the cut?
We were talking about all that stuff on our way up because, you know, you never really know until you're there, but we, you know, all heard those stories, but we were able to walk essentially right up to the gate, and I don't think anybody working there even asked us any questions. They seemed pretty used to people stopping up and checking it out and going on their way.
Yeah.
As long as you don't try to... It's like a tourist spot. I mean, it makes sense, right? People go out there to venture out there. I know there's a mountain that's somewhere near there where you can hike up onto the mountain. Supposedly you can see into, like, above the base. From a distance, I don't know. I had a buddy of mine who said he did that, and they hiked up this mountain. And you can just, that's the best look you can get. I mean, it's miles and miles away, but you're higher elevation than the base itself.
I went to the Alien, the place you mentioned, Jason, and they have a book there you can buy that's like, somebody Xeroxed it and printed it out and self-bound it in plastic, and I love it for that. But it's the Area 51 and S4 guidebook, and it had information about that. I can't remember the name of the mountain, but it did. It had a little map that somebody had probably hand-drawn or done on their computer. I should have brought it with me. It's on the other side of the house.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I could go back there anytime. We do have a couple of questions from the audience, and this one is for Alex, but I'm going to invoke host privilege and say we're all answering it because I think it's a really good question. Our friend BH asks, "Hi, everyone. I'm here. Just got back from a delicious dinner out." That sounds very nice. Alex, do you have any personal favorite theories on UFO identity?
Oh, man. I do. My personal favorite theory, and this is just a theory. I have no idea if it's real or not. Is that UFOs are not extraterrestrials. They're not from outer space. They're actually either interdimensional, even that gets into weird stuff, or just I've heard the theory of them being, like recently with that whole jellyfish UFO thing or UAP. I don't know what's up with that, but maybe they're organic. They're like some kind of organic material. So it's like a living thing that's a UFO. Maybe not like little green men in a craft as the usual. In this documentary, I got to talk about the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life, which was a UFO in 2019 in Pennsylvania, and the footage was shown in the episode, and it was kind of in that sequence where Shannon was talking about the Chestnut Ridge, and you guys had interviewed Sean Forker, who investigated the same property that I had this UFO sighting on, but he investigated about a decade prior, and he had some weird stuff happen there. And the thing that we saw, I mean, it was really strange. I was with people who were more into UFOs. I was like the Bigfoot guy. I didn't really care about this other stuff. And it was like a two-night UFO kind of experience. And the craft, it sort of, I don't know, it was weird in how it acted. It the way it flew, it was like a leaf in slow motion meandering, but it was like an undefined mass with like an illuminated cloud is kind of how I've usually described it. And then there was actually little objects that looked like they shot out of it, smaller, brighter, defined orbs or lights that flew out of it and around it and back into it. I mean, that's what we witnessed. It was absolutely crazy. Here, Aaron, if you want to actually pull this up, I can show you. Let's see. Here, I'll pull this up. And I'll just real quick, just to show people, I have this on my website blog. If you want to just pull up my tab, yeah. It's got the whole thing about that sighting. It was Dubois, Pennsylvania. Cool. So that's the actual, like, it was from a night vision, and I'll go down to the bottom because I have the diorama here, so you can see that was the craft. You see how kind of undefined it is, and then there was this small object in the footage that we didn't see this on the naked eye. This was with a night vision unit. That small object flies parallel to it pretty much the entire time, and it becomes part of it, and you can kind of see it in the video. And this is the video itself. I don't know how to full screen on this thing, but I'll just kind of keep it like this. So you can see how, you know, that small object is flying with it the whole time.
Yeah.
And what we noticed, what we saw was it looked like a light that flew around it. This happened a couple times, and we just watched it. And I can fast forward a little bit towards the end of the video because you can kind of see the shape almost changes. You see how it's like circular now. I don't know or it almost looks like what I described as like a candy wrapper kind of looking thing. And you see how it's like a very dark defined light in the middle?
Yeah, like it's almost morphing, kind of changing
shape. It was so weird. So I don't know. That's just my personal favorite theory about, you know, UFOs, is that maybe they're not extraterrestrial in origin, but I have no idea at all. But so that's just my experience. Still the craziest thing I've ever seen. I'm actually going to be doing a documentary about this very incident for the channel at some point here, which I'm pretty excited about. So kind of dipping my toes into the more UFO realm. So that's nice. My theory. But anybody else, welcome to have a crack at it.
Got any theories, Jason?
Honestly, I'm a pretty boring guy when it comes to this stuff. I believe they're out there somewhere. I don't think there's any news or theories that has really moved me in any particular direction. I would like to have an experience that maybe would change my mind a little bit, but I think they're out there. I'm just not sure if we've seen them yet or not.
Yeah. I'm going to get really broad on this one, and I'll try to come back home after a minute or two, but I used to be very much grounded in the, oh, they're just beings from other planets. That logically makes sense to me, you know? But now we know that according to quantum physics, there may be other dimensions. There could be alternate realities that exist alongside our own. And that's as much technical explanation as I can offer that, because as I said earlier, I'm not smart, but that is something that scientists are talking about now. We're also entering an area where AI is a thing. And if you look at the commercially available AI tools that just you and I can pull up on our computer in 3 minutes, God knows what the government has access to. God knows what, you know, better financed people and powers have access to. Micah Hanks talks about something in his book, The UFO Singularity, about society reaching a point, and I'm going to try to summarize it without messing it up, but when we reach this point that we can refer to as a singularity, where things like extraterrestrial contact, human technology, AI, all of these things start to intersect with one another, you know, and we kind of reach this point where things just explode. So if we're talking about something that big and that vast, other planets plus other dimensions plus artificial intelligence plus rapidly developing human technology, I don't think these things are just one thing. And I think that goes beyond the physical descriptions where we have some of them look like saucers, some of them look like orbs. In these eras, we had triangles. In these eras, we had big cubes, you know, whatever. I think we're looking at more than one thing. Maybe that's time travelers from the future. Maybe that's people from other dimensions. Maybe that's fish people from the distant past. Maybe it's none of those things.
Maybe it's Gungans.
Maybe it's Gungans. I mean, Star Wars was again a galaxy a long time ago, very far away. But
Jar Jar Binks, he's the true Sith Lord.
Yeah, I might have been watching too much Star Trek recently, but I just don't. If we're talking about outer space, we're talking about numbers that are so vast, they may as well be infinite. Same goes for alternate dimensions. So why would UFOs only be one thing? That's my take. For whatever it's worth, probably.
It's interesting. I mean, it's super creepy when you start thinking about that. When you think about AI, where we're at, I'm actually kind of terrified of all the stuff going on. Because like all technology, there's a good and a bad, right? And the bad is going to, I don't want to say outweigh the good, but it you know, it hinges on that. But then you think about this other stuff going on, and you see like throughout the UFO history, and I'm not huge into like the UFO topic. I follow a little bit of like UFO Twitter, whatever train wreck that it is. It's like, yeah, you think the Bigfoot community is bad, and then you just go look at UFO stuff, and it's like, whoa, okay. but it seems like if you look at the progression of UFOs over time, it's like it mirrors our technology. I don't know if that has to do with us. It's like an outward projection thing where, you know, with the rise of nuclear weapons, you have these really nuts and bolts looking craft. And now it's to the point where you have like a jellyfish, whatever thing. It looks like a strange creature. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. This could be totally way out there, but it is interesting to see that because we've entered a time period where like the last 100 years, we as a species have shifted more technologically than I think the last 10,000 years before that, right? Like, sure, there were a lot of technological changes, but you compare somebody who's in their 90s now to when they were born and like what we have available at our fingertips, that is like you go from level 5 to level 700. I mean, it's crazy because we're already talking about AI and it's basically already taking over less than 100 years later. So
yeah,
really weird.
it gets into some very frightening territory. And
I see a comment that, Tristan, actually, the guy named Kaiju Ninja, says, spoiler alert, we have UFOs inside our bodies.
I actually have that flag. That's the next comment I was going to bring up.
They're already here. They're already here. It's like a War of the Worlds, right? They've been here the whole time.
I mean, if you can travel... What, Jason?
I buy the UFOs in our bodies theory. I just feel weirder and weirder all the time.
So. There's something in me.
That'd be it. That and the microplastics.
Oh, yeah. That's horrific to think about.
We're destroying the world. Yeah.
And ourselves. That's the worst part.
If AI ever gets a hold of microplastics, we're all doomed. No, I know that's a serious issue. I'm sorry. I deal with horrifying concepts or humor. Here,
black humor. Good way to deal with it.
That's how we navigate. Here is a good question from our friend Mr. Dollar Store Gloves. Had to mute there for a second. Mr. Dollar Store Gloves says, my favorite part was the story about the guy who saw aliens digging in the soil and then left and told his wife. I thoroughly enjoyed that part. So if you saw that, would you just go home or check where they were digging? Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, man. I feel like I'd probably check, but then I'm going to end up like the kid in the X-Files movie that falls into the pit and becomes like the black-eyed children thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
With the weird stuff that crawls in his skin. That scene terrified me as a kid. So, yeah, I probably wouldn't. I feel like I'd end up like that. So I think I'd pass. From a distance.
I actually had the same thought when I was watching that segment today. I was like, what would I do? Would I chase them? Would I wave and say hello? I don't know.
Citizen's arrest?
Yeah, would you try to detain one? There is that's actually happened in a couple cases, believe it or not. That's a story for another day. What about you, Jason? Are you chasing these guys down? What are you doing?
I don't know. Last night I was in a drive-thru at Cane's, and was some sort of sign, a NASCAR racer, and a man just walked in front of my car and stole the sign. And I pretended not to see. So
that's you had more important business, Cane's, man.
It's probably what I'm doing in every situation.
I worked for a competitor of Cane's at one point in time, and that's actually a pretty common thing.
We don't have any Cane's up here, unfortunately. We get all the bad fast food. Like, all we have is McDonald's and Wendy's. I mean, you probably shouldn't be eating that stuff in a lot, but, you know, guilty pleasure kind of stuff, right?
You know, you got to get by. You got to function. I had another fun anecdote about fast food, but I just lost it. we have a couple interesting comments, not really questions, but we're gonna talk about them. Dave Jones, who's watching on YouTube, had a triangle UFO sighting in Pennsylvania in 2019.
Wow.
Yeah. This he's describing it as a triangle thing with four circles, one in each corner and one in the middle, and it glowed on the outside. He says it was large, the size of a football field. And this is really interesting. Dave goes on to explain that it flew in a serpentine pattern and eventually flew over the tree line.
That's so wild, because the thing that I saw, again, the way I described it, that's actually a really good way to describe it, serpentine, but I would say leaf in slow motion. And meandering, because like I said, it kind of, the pattern was like a wavy pattern, and then it went over the tree line. We watched it until it went over the tree line, and then it was like out of Star Wars, where you just see like a little zip into space. Two of us saw this light just go up, but that the football field size UFO thing, from what I understand, is pretty common. There's a famous sighting out here in the Bridgewater Triangle in New England of these two journalists, news guys that were doing a story, and they actually saw one of these things. And one of the guys was like a former Air Force dude, and he was like, this thing was the size of a football field. So I feel like I've heard that same kind of motif before. And I'd be really curious, Dave, because that's in 2019, I saw mine in, I had the blog open when I was looking, I think it was June of 2019. So be sure to comment where you saw it. I'd be really curious to know if it was, because mine was in Dubois, which is kind of in the center. But Dave Jones, please comment. Let us know where it was, and if you want to disclose, of course.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to know.
You can send us an email as well, aaron@smalltownmonsters.com, and I will make sure it gets into Alex's hands if you'd like to do that.
I'd be very curious to know.
always interested to. Yeah, I, one of my favorite things about this show, just a little off the cuff here, I love hearing people's encounters when they share them. So thank you, Dave. Really, really cool. He also shared a comment here that it did not make any noise when it flew off. That's really interesting.
Yeah, the one I saw, no noise. But the second night, we had a weird noise incident where we couldn't see the sky, but you could hear this whirring and this kind of C note, and it was like you could hear it in the sky. It was really weird. I'm going to cover it again in the documentary that I do eventually, because it was just genuinely one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced. And, you know, I'm a guy that goes to look for Bigfoot and stuff like that. So it was like that took the cake.
It's always interesting when someone who spends a lot of time in this world says it's one of the strangest things I've ever experienced. Like that's that's impactful. I am curious, Alex, how you ended up being involved in this shoot. You talked a little bit about this earlier, but this is almost like, you know, like I'm going back to like movie prequels and thinking about Star Wars again, but this is like seeing Alex in, you know, the prequel trilogy, and then he shows up in A New Hope. So how did you end up being involved in this project?
Because Seth was doing, Seth and Jason and Zach, you guys were like the primaries on that. Brandon, I think, was involved. Obviously, Shannon, kind of as the co-host or host in that case with Seth. They were just doing it that whole year, 2019. And we had just talked about he wanted to do stuff on like the Betty and Barney Hill case. Obviously, that's one of the most famous cases. So Seth more or less just let me plan out the New Hampshire portion of their East Coast trip. You guys went from like New York, I think it was New York, Hudson Valley, and then you came up to New Hampshire. So it was like kind of, it was like a road trip where they did all the stops. And then I was like, well, let's go to Exeter. And then it's only a couple hours to the mountains and we'll go right to where the Betty Barney Hill thing happened. And it was cool because growing up in New Hampshire, I've always kind of heard of that story and I hike a lot in that area too. So I was never really into it so much, but it was part of the weird history. So I thought, you know, obviously come up here and do a documentary series that's about UFOs in every corner of the country. I mean, they're everywhere from the Southwest to the Midwest, the Northeast, all over the place. West Coast.
That's kind of one of the things that's covered in this documentary is just how widespread this phenomena is. You know, I think Shannon even says in the opening narration, you basically just need the sky and a person, you know, for one of these sightings to occur. Another kind of behind the scenes question, this might be more for Jason. Did you have a favorite interview that was conducted during the course of this project? Cause you guys talked to so many people, like just in this episode, it's Mark Matsky, Stan Gordon, David Weatherly, like Ryan Sprague, Sam Sheeran, like all these people. So I'm just curious if there's an interview that sticks out in your mind that was really memorable.
Yeah, I mean, several of those, but for different reasons. Sam Sheeran was awesome just because we had worked with him for so long that it was almost kind of surreal to see him being interviewed just as a witness. But that was, and it was just good to see Sam. So that was fun. Stan Gordon is always fun because he kind of frames everything for us without even being really prompted. He's just ready to go. An interview with Stan is kind of like a marathon. It's, you get a lot of information and
Zach's favorite pastime.
Yeah. Zach always, because he's running camera, sometimes handheld, he's like ready to go to bed when Stan's done, not because of the subject matter, but just because it's so grueling to film an interview that goes for that long.
I've seen that man run a camera and he commits. So
yeah. I can't remember her name, but there was a woman, we were up in Maine and she kind of took us on this, I don't know if you would call it like a sky watching trip. But that
was weird.
That was weird, but it was fun. And
I saw something that night. I really did. I don't know if you remember. I saw this like over this hill, just this little blip of light. And I think it's even in the trailer. It's because there's a clip of me going like, "Did you guys not see that?" I was the only one that saw it. It was weird.
Yeah, there was. There's a meeting in Phoenix. I didn't know that Kurt Russell had the famous sighting about the Phoenix lights. So, when that came up while we were in Phoenix, that was pretty exciting to me.
I just stumbled onto that recently too. Yeah.
It is such a cool case. I remember when Seth was talking about covering the Phoenix lights for this series back then, I was like, man, that was, to me, in my eyes at the time, that was one of the most prolific UFO flight sighting flaps really that ever happened, just because of the, whatever it was, even if it is, you know, secret government tech or whatever, right? It was so bold and out in the open. That's what I thought was really cool about it.
It's the only case I'm aware of, and I'm sure there have been others, but it's the only case I'm aware of where the only response the government could come up with was to make a joke out of it. Like, that's right. All they could think of. They were like, everybody saw this thing. I don't know what to do. Put somebody in an alien.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't know. Just try that. See if that does it. I don't know. Yeah, it's such a great one.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, a few more. Oh, here's a fun question from our friend Kaiju Ninja 1985. And I always love throwing this one at Alex. It's always a good time. Kaiju Ninja 1985 asks, do you think there is a UFO Bigfoot connection?
Should I go first, or one of you guys want to take that? Yeah, no, appreciate that, Tristan. Tristan's a cool cat. I've had him on my show back in the day. I don't personally know. I don't think there's a connection. Who knows? I mean, maybe there is. Maybe all this stuff is connected. Nobody really knows. We don't have the answers. But I don't even know if Bigfoot is supernatural or paranormal, right? I still more in the flesh and blood camp, having spent so much time in the wilderness. There's still so much space out there to hide, like Alaska, Canada. It's just ridiculous, as I've shown in some of my videos. But I always kind of bring up the analogy of, well, you know, you see an orb in the woods, or you see a UFO and then you see a deer afterwards. Are you just going to assume that that deer is paranormal? I mean, maybe some people would be like, oh, it's a skinwalker, right? But I think most people wouldn't. So you see a UFO or an orb and then a Bigfoot before or afterwards. Does that mean they're necessarily connected because they're two strange things? Maybe. I do believe there's other weird stuff in the world, simultaneous things going on that maybe are not connected. Maybe they are. Obviously, I think there's weirder stuff out there, talking about my UFO sighting that I just was talking about. So I know there's something strange going on. What it is, I don't know. And I just don't think there's as established of a UFO Bigfoot connection as I think people like to assume. We just really have no way to know, actually.
Yeah. What do you think, Jason?
I think it's fun to think about. I think, you know, a lot of people will jump to like, well, everybody has trail cameras everywhere, so why haven't we seen anything? So, I don't know. There could be a possible explanation in there somewhere, but for the most part, I think it's just fun to think about. And honestly, I had never associated the two things until we were making Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, and I started to see the stories about the orbs and stuff like that, so... Yeah, it's something where there's just not a lot of stuff out there, but it's definitely fun to consider. And a lot of people have crossover with those sightings, so you never know.
Yeah. It's one of those things where we don't really have enough data in either column, you know. Can't solve for X because I'm bad at math. But no, that's a great question. Thank you, Kaiju Ninja 85. Always good to see you. I refuse to refer to him as anything other than Kaiju Ninja 85 because it's the best screen name ever. Our friend Mothman 46, always good to see you, my dude. Your boy Mothman 46 asks, do you ever wonder how a craft from another dimension can be tracked with our primitive tech? That's a fun one.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say, I mean, we're kind of just getting to a point where we have a lot of like radar data and stuff like that. Like, yeah, these things have been picked up on radar over the years, but as that technology has evolved, that data has increased in quality. And I'm thinking specifically of the Tic Tac, you know, that series of videos that came out around 2017. I hate to fall back on a cliche, but for me, that's kind of set sort of a standard in how I like to see this stuff go. because you had it being released by a private entity, and then you have the government saying, yeah, no, we really don't know what this is. And as that technology has improved, we've gotten more of that. So I think, I don't know, on the one hand, how could we ever track something from another dimension reliably? If we're seeing these things, is it because they want us to? Is it not because we caught them? I don't know. Now Mothman 46 has me chasing myself in circles, and I'm going to be on this all night. So thanks, dude. Thanks. What do you guys got?
I think things are kind of just now opening up. Like when you think of something like the James Webb Space Telescope, like if anything, it's kind of terrifying because it just shows, you know, how little we're seeing in that field of vision. So if we are, you know, being visited by things, the tremendous length that they would have to travel to even be visible is kind of, in one way it's kind of disappointing, and in another way it's kind of terrifying, because if something can make that trip, then we're pretty far behind.
Yeah. what else could they be capable of, you know?
Yeah.
We think about cases like the Malmstrom incident, where these nuclear ICBMs are disarmed independently by a glowing red orb. You know, that's awful. That's bad. Right. I don't want that.
a little terrifying, but no, this is a great question. I don't know. I mean, it seems like, I think this argument comes up a little bit with like the Bigfoot stuff too, because people are like, oh, you know, if these things are out there, why aren't they leaving more of an impact in the environment? But yeah, you have all these tracks, you have hair samples. So even if there is some sort of weird paranormal element to it, there's still a physical interaction. We talk about like what's coming up with some of the STM stuff with like the Mantell case, right? With the lost contact, there's like a physical interaction with whatever this thing is being shot or shooting down a plane. Really interesting story that I have, kind of like a personal anecdote. I know somebody named Mark D'Antonio. He is the former chief video and photo analyst for MUFON, right? He's a bona fide astronomer. He runs like a astronomy thing in Arizona. He used to live up in the New England area. I've met him at a few events. I used to do this Greater New England UFO and Bigfoot conference back in the day, where they combined, like, you know, they do a Bigfoot night and then there'd be some UFO stuff. So I got to meet a lot of people that were into ufology, which is really cool. So that's how I kind of like knew a little bit about this topic. But he told me this crazy story where he was on like a nuclear submarine. He was doing some kind of project with like government contracting. And they talked about a story where the guys on the submarine had some kind of craft underwater that like zipped past them, and they were able to track it. But it was inconceivable that it could have been anything of an earthly origins, right? Like they said, well, Russia doesn't have this, China doesn't have it, you know, neither like the near peer adversaries didn't seem to have that kind of technology. And you know, I've even found an article, I think it was posted in the Sun back then, where it was like, basically the claim is the US Navy is running a top secret program to detect UFOs under the ocean. And that's what Mark had kind of claimed. He said, you know, and he actually talked about witnessing it. Leading astronomer and ufologist Mark D'Antonio says he witnessed a USO, or an unidentified submerged object, while aboard a Navy submarine in the North Atlantic. And the guy's really credible, because he's an astronomer. That's like what he does. And he just happened to get into the stuff with MUFON with the video analysis. But I feel like that's somebody that you'd want to talk to about this kind of topic, who has some sort of a technical knowledge about this technology. And, you know, how some of this detection stuff might work. It's above my pay grade, so to speak. You know, I like to dabble in a little bit, but I'm not super into it or super well-versed.
Yeah. I love these speculative questions, and the audience has probably noticed I tend to go on a tear when they're asked. So thank you for that. But I'm almost, and Sam Sheeran kind of talks about this in this episode, in that, you know, wonderful baritone of his, you know, I'm almost more bothered by the idea that this could be human technology that we just don't know about yet. Because right. Like something from another dimension, another planet, we don't know what their motivations are, but we know that people don't have a great track record. So,
yeah. Well, that's like, I remember watching The X-Files growing up, and obviously, you know, one of the best shows of all time, but they had some of those episodes where they would think it'd be alien abductions, and it turns out to be some secret government black ops program where they're just kidnapping people and basically pretending to be aliens. Like, what if that you know, the '50s during the Cold War, people could take the gloves off a little bit and just do all these espionage. I mean, you had crazy stuff like MK Ultra going on where there was a lot of really nutty kind of stuff going on that definitely would raise some eyebrows, but it was kind of all theoretical and up in the air at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what do we not know about? Ugh. Again, speculation. Well, speaking of abductions, our friend Metallica 4567 has a good question for us. Alex, being from New Hampshire, what is your take on the Betty and Barney Hill case?
Really good question. I mean, so the area, I'm actually hoping to do a video on this mountain pass up there for strange places, which would be really cool. But there's Franconia Notch. Jason, you would remember that's the two mountains we drove through, and that's where that gondola goes up. So one of the suggestions was that, and this happened in like 1960 something, 61 or 59. Gosh, I don't remember. But they have a plaque for it now there. It was before you go into the mountains, Betty and Barney Hill. And it's near where this formation called the Old Man of the Mountain used to be. There's also Indian Head, which is this another face-looking rock formation. But they said that possibly the craft that they saw was actually just the gondola going up the mountain with the lights on. Which doesn't make sense because they, especially at that time, it probably wouldn't have been running at night. I think this was in the winter. You know, why would this gondola, which is kind of dangerous. I mean, Jason, you remember, it was kind of scary being on that thing. Like, yeah. 60 people in there. And this was way back, probably before a lot of the safety protocols that we enjoy now existed. Why they would be doing that at the time of the hour at night when these people were going through this mountain pass. It doesn't seem to line up. But, of course, you're going to have people try to explain things away. Or they were just delirious. They were tired. They've been driving from, was it Montreal, and they just were really tired. And getting to Portsmouth, which was right around Exeter, where we would have been filming the Exeter incident, that's a long drive still. Like, so they maybe were just feeling some type of way. But I don't know. I mean, I have a buddy named John Horrigan. He was in our Bridgewater Triangle documentary. He was one of the last people to interview Betty Hill while she was still alive. And from what I understand, she knew Linda Moulton Howe? No, not Linda Moulton Howe. There's another UFO lady who is her niece, I want to say. Gosh, what is her name? I'm going to remember when we're off air, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But what's crazy is when we were there in Exeter, Jason, so we had this guy named Mike Stevens take us to the spot where this Exeter craft was seen. And these were red lights that were chasing police. And it was a really weird incident. There's a whole UFO festival there now. Exeter UFO Festival. But where Betty Hill lived, especially after Barney died, she lived in an apartment building, and we went to the spot literally down the street from where the Exeter UFO incident happened, just like in terms of a kind of small world sort of situation. Again, this is 2 hours away from the mountains where the alleged incident happened. And there's also a really cool story that the night of the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, there was some kind of a radar station in neighboring Vermont that said they had anomalous activity over the base that they thought was Soviet craft, because they were stationed, you know, towards Canada. The Soviets would come over. So it was kind of, there's a whole bunch of moving pieces to the sort of puzzle there, which is really interesting. Now, that's actually one of the comments right there. Contagious Cajun says an air base in Vermont caught an object on radar in the area Betty and Barney Hill were supposedly abducted. Yeah. So That's pretty cool. Like, that is very interesting. And there may be something on that in the future, but I can't say if I'm going to do a video on that. Or not.
I don't know.
We'll see.
might be a case that's part of a discussion in an upcoming series called UFOs Revisited. I don't know. Yeah, it's a fascinating case. And I said this about Travis Walton, the last discussion about UFOs we had on this show. Historically, I've been very skeptical of abduction phenomena, but it's something that the more I've looked into, my opinions have kind of morphed on that. And, Betty and Barney Hill is particularly interesting if you look at the fact that, you know, it was the 60s and they were an interracial couple. So the scrutiny and the attention would have been very different from what it is today. And I think, you know, looking at it that way through the lens of the human experience, why would they report this? It's a fascinating case. I don't want to comment too much on it, but
I knew this was going to lead back to the LPL, but you got to pull up this comment about this stargazer. He says, I've got a really good friend who lives in Hopkinsville. So Hopkinsville. You and I were just talking about this, Aaron.
We were just talking about this a few days ago. Yeah.
So I included it in my Strange Places video because it was like a little footnote. Well, you know, less than 30 miles from the LBL, you have the Hopkinsville, Kelly Hopkinsville with the Hopkinsville Goblin case, one of the arguably most famous UFO little creature incidents that's ever happened, and that's right near the LBL. So there we go. It all came full circle.
Yeah, that's something that might be explored in an upcoming book from Small Town Monsters Publishing as well. Yeah, you never know. No, that's something I think a lot of folks don't realize is that Hopkinsville is right next to the land between the lakes. Like if you're throwing a rock from Texas, they're in the same place.
Well, it's crazy because you got Hopkinsville on one side, and then on the other side, on the western side of the LBL, you have Murray, Kentucky, which was home of the vampire cult, which, again, that might be covered in my new episode, which hopefully is almost uploaded for those squad members.
That's coming.
I'll check it. We'll see.
Jason's just like, yeah. Vampires.
30 minutes left.
I never know what's going on.
Well, let's circle back to this project. We've got a little bit of time left in our discussion tonight. And I do see a few more interesting questions and comments in the chat here. And I just accidentally scrolled away from the one that I was going to pull up. Where did it go? Oh, maybe here's kind of a straw poll for our panel tonight. S. Pliskin asks, hey guys, S. Pliskin, I get it now. Hey guys, have there been any sightings in Paradise, California? I don't know anything about California sightings. You guys got anything? I
feel like that's one for Eli.
I was going to say, I think we need the resident Californian for that.
Yeah. Come back in the future, S. Pliskin. I see you. I see that. I love it.
STM California division may have an answer for you.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Glenn H. has an interesting question that I think we can all three chime in on a little bit. What do you consider full disclosure on the subject?
Oh, man. I don't know. I'll jump into it real quick because my answer is not that great. But I don't know. It's like you see the way I have mixed feelings on it because people, like, I remember I would do this. I did this at this Greater New England UFO conference I used to speak at. And I asked people during my talk, I'm like, we were having a panel discussion. I'm like, well, how many people here trust the government, right? And you probably get like very few hands that get raised. I don't care whoever you support, right? Whichever side or politician, most people probably don't like the government. So, but why is there such a emphasis on disclosure from the government about the UAP/UFO topic? I mean, if that broadly people don't trust government for a lot of different things, but yet they want to trust to hear. There's like an interest in some of the congressional hearings and the stuff going on. And you know, you see it on UFO Twitter, it's back and forth. So I don't know. What is full disclosure? I don't know. Can there even be a full disclosure without it being manipulated? You know, I hear the theories about, well, there's going to be a disclosure just so, oh, they're going to say there's aliens. So then that increases defense budgets and military spending and all this stuff. Who knows? I don't really know. We're obviously not privy and don't have access to that level of stuff going on. At least I think so.
Yeah.
Like Area 51's a tip of the iceberg kind of thing.
Yeah. Short of declassifying every classified government document, which is never going to happen, and opening the doors to every government base and saying, come on in, everybody, it's a full open house. You know, it's kind of impossible for us to reach a level of full disclosure where we know that we know everything that they know.
I have a really cool, quick anecdotal story to share, right? So recently I was in Louisiana. I met up with a guy who's a former Secret Service agent. Super cool guy. He has some incredible stories, has met, you know, all these famous presidents and leaders, did detail for the Bushes. He told a story about with UFOs where I guess like Bush or somebody had asked, you know, hey, can we know about, you know, I want to know about the UFOs. And they said, well, that's, you're not on a need to know basis on that kind of thing. That's like a different classification level. Mm-hmm. You can't, it's not even the president of the United States doesn't even get access to that kind of stuff. I thought that was really interesting.
I've heard
he also told me some before, crazy right? stories about the fact that Lyndon B. Johnson's ranch is haunted. And apparently it's like well known in the Secret Service that that ranch is haunted, but that's beside the point.
That is an anecdote I've heard as well. Yeah. I've been to his birth home. It's about an hour from where I live.
Oh, dude, the stories that this guy was telling me about, because he was on detail for the Johnson family, and he talked about, like, they straight up, you know, he would visit. But, you know, ghost stuff for another time, but really interesting.
Stay tuned. What do you have? Wow. Sorry, let's try again. Do you have an opinion on this one, Jason?
I think the only answer that would be universally satisfying would be some sort of documentation and proof. No matter what the truth is, short of that, I don't think there really is an answer that's going to satiate anybody's curiosity or skepticism.
Yeah.
And if we're not there, then who knows?
Well, I was going to say, we've kind of reached a point, you mentioned if we're not there, you know, where we have almost everything except the president giving a live press conference and saying, you know, I think I said this last time we talked about this, they're real. They hang out at the White House, or for, you know, it's all true. You know, like that's really the only thing we don't have at this point. We have congressional hearings. We have former intelligence officers coming forward. We have the thousands and thousands and thousands of eyewitness testimonies that we've had forever, you know? So it's almost, it kind of depends on how you think about it. In one way, we're already there. We've already reached a level of disclosure that's unprecedented. But then on the other hand, how much further can we possibly go? So that's a great question, Glenn. Really appreciate that. That's a fun one. Let's see. We are almost at the top of the hour, but I'd like to take one more audience question. Our friend Dave Jones, who shared his encounter just a little while ago, has a question that is really, I think, the most important that we could possibly answer. If you stumbled upon an empty UFO and climbed inside and are able to fly it anywhere, where in the world would you go?
My only response to that is, who would say no to that, right? Like, you'd have to be crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm climbing in it. Even if it's the last thing I ever do, I'm going to climb in it.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go to Japan, and I'm going to fly directly to that Godzilla zipline.
Oh, brah. The one that has the one-to-one scale of his head that you zip out of his mouth that people tag me on Facebook approximately every 90 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm never going to be able to afford it otherwise. So
pull up. We'll go together.
I think it would just be like Grand Theft Auto with a UFO. Grand Theft UFO. Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be great.
I would fly it to, like, you know, the secret military bases where people say they've seen UFOs and just see what happens. You know, are they going to wave me in? Like, oh, hey, yeah, okay, come on back. That would answer a lot of questions. Yeah. I don't know where I would go. That's a really good question.
I feel like I'd go to some place like Machu Picchu or the pyramids just to, like, mess with people. They're like, UFOs at these sacred sites. I don't know. That'd be kind of fun. Cause a panic in the worldwide press.
Well, then you could immediately write a book about it.
And yes.
Sell it.
My memoir, My Time in a Stolen UFO.
Wasn't that a movie? That's a movie from the 80s. And now I can't remember what it's called. The UFO looked like a giant walnut. A kid goes inside it.
Oh, man.
And he flies around, and I think he travels through time or something. And he comes back, and everyone's old. Wow. What a great ending to the show. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming and hanging out with me. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, yeah. Talking about UFOs, good time.
Flight of the Navigator. Sorry. Contagious Cajun and Kaiju Ninja 1985. Flight of the Navigator.
Good job, guys. Smart audience. We have a very smart audience.
Thank you, guys. Wow. I'm the worst. Jason, thanks so much for making time. Alex, I appreciate you coming on last minute. Hopefully, we'll get both of you guys back on again soon. But for now, just, again, thank you.
Enjoy the UFO content, guys. There's definitely going to be more of that.
Yes. We got more coming for sure. And again, hopefully we get to see Jason again soon. He's, like I said, I don't know what he does, but he's not on camera a lot. So
not much.
He's been everywhere. A lot of good pictures, a lot of great profile pictures have come out of Jason's photography on shoots. So
That's the truth. Jason, this is a fun little factoid that I can squeeze in here. Jason is the guy that got me set up doing this whole live broadcasting with SDM thing. And Alex is the guy that taught me how to use StreamYard. So in a way, this was inevitable.
Wow. Yeah, it's all full circle.
Yeah, that first week was, all I had was, I did almost no work. So.
Well, you called me and said, hey, post this show. So
true.
Anyway, thank you everybody for tuning in. It's been a pleasure to have you. We will see you next time.
Peace, guys. Don't get abducted.
You've been listening to the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. If you enjoyed this show, consider giving it a like, review, rating, or sharing it with a friend. And be sure to visit smalltownmonsters.com for more info about this and other STM projects.